to get away. We don't need no stress.
From the creators of Relevant Magazine, this is the Relevant Podcast.
Get away. We don't need no stress. We don't need no stress.
It's Friday, July 6, 2018, and it's the Relevant Podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Strang, and here with me in our Orlando studio, Andre Henry.
Yo.
Over there on the ones and twos, our illustrious producer, my brother, Chandler Strang.
Hello.
On the Skype line from Loverland, Virginia, Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
And all the way back from mainland China, Skyping us from Nashville, Tennessee, Annie F. Downs.
Ni hao, gents. I'm back.
We are so excited you're back. Twitter has not let us forget how much your presence is needed on this show.
No.
It really crushed my self-esteem pretty bad. I'm still recovering. I've got a lot of questions about China.
I'm so ready, Jesse. I've been dying to talk to y'all. I listened to every episode while I was gone, and it made me so sad to not be able to respond all the time. So let's go.
All right. Before we get into China, I think, you know, we just came off July 4th, as you know, yes. America's birthday. But America is not the only great institution that has a birthday this week.
I can't remember.
How can we forget? We have it on the company calendar. Annie F. Downs Day.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
Annie's birthday is July
tomorrow.
7th. That's right. Very exciting.
Oh my gosh, that's so sweet that y'all remember.
I have a question, because you know those kids growing up that had like a birthday right next to Christmas, you know, and they would get the singular birthday present from the relatives that says, Merry birthday / happy or Merry birthday.
That would work. I knew what you meant.
The Merry Christmas, happy birthday combined gift. So instead of getting the two spread out over the year, you get one.
Yeah.
And it's a way to cheat. How often growing up did you either get fireworks as birthday presents that people didn't get to during their 4th of July, or it was like Omaha steaks that didn't make it to the grill?
We often had barbecues on my birthday, which the grill was never turned on because they were just left over from the 4th of July for sure.
Wow.
Totally true.
And you always had a red, white, and blue birthday cake or cupcakes, I assume.
Yes. Cookie cake.
My birthday is March 15th. So whenever in school years, you know, whenever you'd have to bring cupcakes for your birthday, the only thing available was green.
Yeah.
You know,
you are getting St. Patrick's Day. Birthday.
Everybody thought I was Irish. And I'm like, I'm not Irish. There's no other options.
Yeah. I had no choice when I was born, you guys. Yes, that's exactly it. I almost am the same age as our country.
I think that's how it works. I think that's how the math works.
That's the science of this, right? Am I doing this birthday thing correctly?
I think you're equally as beloved as
a mayor. I don't know if that's a compliment at this point in the world.
you were just in China. Is it a compliment? I don't know. What's the thoughts of it?
How was China? A, what were you doing? And B, can you talk about it?
Yeah, for sure I can talk about it. My cousin and his wife are teachers there. So we seriously were just being tourists. We were just going, my sister and I just went to see China. We were in Wuhan and Xi'an, and it was awesome. There were multiple days where I saw no other foreigners, where literally we were the only non-Chinese people that were in a place, and we got stared at constantly. Not just because of the beauty, but purely because I'm a white girl in China.
Hey guys, this story isn't checking out. Annie was definitely espionage, right? Like this is something she's checking out tariffs or something.
I'm not buying it. I watched a very special episode of Million Dollar Listing New York on Bravo last night. I was catching up on the DVR. I've been traveling for a couple weeks.
You talk about watching TV every night like you're just catching up. The truth is you just watch TV every night.
Yeah. Ryan Serhan, one of the great real estate guys feature on Bravo's Million Dollar List in New York, had an opportunity for a great deal in China and was unable to get a visa. because of the contentious relationship between our governments right now. It was a big dramatic twist.
How was Annie able to get
in? That's what I'm saying. How was Annie able to get in there with no problems, you know?
This is a really interesting story, actually, that I don't even know if I've told any of y'all offline or on the podcast. My sister and I both kind of, you know, China is communist, obviously. And And Christianity is not really probably celebrated there. Is that a way to say that?
Yeah. It has to be. The only churches that can officially exist are the ones that are associated with like the state.
It's almost like Russia in that respect. You have to be like a registered religious institution so they can monitor the activity, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. Yeah. And they do not allow much social media. So when my sister works at a church, I do not work at a church, but I work in the faith space, as you well know. When my sister and I were both applying for our visas, we applied to two different places. It's boring. It doesn't matter. We had to apply to two different places. And they told my sister, like, yeah, just write this letter saying you work at a church and it'll be fine. And they said to me, like, you're never going to get a visa. Like, sorry, you already bought your flight. There's no way China's going to give you a visa because you're just so public. And we got our visas back. We both got them. Luckily, obviously, I got a 10-year visa and my sister got a 12-day visa. She had one day longer than we were there that she was allowed to be there and then had to be out of the country. And I can go back for 60 days at a time for the next 10 years.
Hey, none of this is adding up. None of it is adding up.
No,
isn't that insane though? So yeah, it was awesome. You guys, my favorite thing, well, for starters, the food is incredible. I mean, it's so different than anything I've ever experienced. And delicious. But my favorite thing we did is then Xi'an's one, it has a wall around it. It's one of the oldest walls in China besides the Great Wall, sadly. And when we were in Xi'an, we saw the Terracotta Warriors. Do y'all know this whole thing about the Terracotta Warriors?
Oh, yeah.
Jesse, listen, you there so hard because there is some great conspiracy theories around the Terracotta Warriors.
Well, you know, my favorite thing about the Terracotta Warriors is a few years ago, an American tourist, not unlike yourself, broke one of the fingers off and took it home as a like tourist gift. And it caused an international incident.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Enlighten
the rest of us. Cause when I think of terracotta, I think of flooring. So what is,
you're not totally wrong. It's the same kind of clay, but thousands of years ago when one of the kings of this region of China died, they believe that what you put with you in death is what will go with you to the next life.
So nice flooring.
So gratefully. So apparently he had defeated, I hope I'm telling the story right, he had defeated all the areas around him and was very concerned about in future generations that he would be overtaken. And so he buried thousands, like something like 30,000 soldiers that are human size and chariots and horses that are made out of terracotta. They're made out of clay. He set them all around his tomb. And they were only discovered 40 years ago. And they're thousands and thousands of years old. But it's so creepy.
How many enemies do you make in life to think that you need to take an army with you to the afterlife?
I like your theory. So many thoughts like that. So many existential thoughts all there.
I like Cameron's theory that the supplies you put in your coffin with you are what your mansion in heaven.
Yeah, that's right.
My coffin's going to have a nice butcher block.
You should see Jan Crouch's tomb.
So you have to build your mansion.
Butcher block for my countertops in my mansion in heaven. I'm going to have butcher block countertops.
I'm a big fan of Subway Tile. Love it.
Hey, listen, I'm terminally ill. I got to make a run to Lowe's real quick. I just want samples. I want Peter or the angel Gabriel, whoever is in charge of contracting for the mansions in heaven, to make sure they got my tile samples right. I do not want a mix up because that's forever.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'll tell you, if you have to special order something, you're screwed because delay, you may not get there in time.
Yeah, it could be a few thousand years. I mean, it's a blink of an eye up there. But meanwhile, I'm having to live without shiplap. So a day is like 1,000 years. They say that for a reason. It takes forever to get that shiplap up there.
Hey, Annie, so what's the conspiracy theory around the clay soldiers?
Oh, there's just all sorts of thoughts of this is true with any archaeological dig. is like, did you really find that? What's the, what do you want us to believe versus what actually happened? What, you know, there's all that thoughts that people have. I didn't Google it while I was in China because I'm not an idiot and didn't want to get like arrested and like, yeah. You know, I didn't Google anything I shouldn't Google while I was there. Now that I'm home, I'm about to go like swimming deep into Terracotta Warrior conspiracy theories. Yeah,
let me ask you this. What was the coolest thing that you saw while you were
there? So the coolest thing that's how we got to Terracotta Warriors. By far the coolest thing was the wall around Xi'an. You can bike around the top of the wall on a bicycle. And so we did that. And it is so cool. Cause then you see all sides of the city because you're around the whole wall. You see what's inside, what's outside. That was by far my favorite part. This will have to be a to be continued. I just know that there are a lot of theories around what they are, what they have found and what they haven't found, because they know where the tomb of the king is. Uh-huh. And they won't dig it up because they're worried that exposure to the sun.
We've all seen the money.
It's cool. It is one of the most interesting things I've ever seen because it is just rows and rows of these soldiers and they all look different. They aren't like cookie cutter. They all look like a different person because he genuinely believed he had to create an entire army out of clay to protect him in his afterlife. Mm. So they all are individually, they all have different faces and different body builds. I mean, it is fascinating. I mean, that's what I thought so many times. My family and I, we were like, man, it is amazing what fear will make you do.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When yes. Fear will make you spend your time on and make you spend your money on if you are just afraid. And that he built an entire army because he was afraid.
Yeah. So in addition to the trip to China, seeing all this cool stuff, eating good food, we got to know what are the big birthday plans? How are you ringing it in this year? I'm assuming there'll be leftover fireworks.
You always do a big friend blowout, don't you?
Yes, I normally do, but it did not, me being out of the country didn't allow it, unfortunately made it not pan out quite like it normally does. Normally we do like a come one, come all, we're in a public place. If you know my name and know how to find us, you're welcome to celebrate. I mean, like that's kind of what we normally do because I think that is so fun.
I believe in Nashville, those are called hootenannies.
I know, Cameron, that's it.
Title it, Cameron, a hootenannie.
But
here's the thing, Cameron, you're mistaken.
That's a good one.
Yeah. You're thinking of hoedown, not hootenannie hoedown. It's a common mistake.
If it's a come on, come all, it's a hootenannie. If it's just a few friends, it's a hoedown.
Oh, I got it.
Friends and family, hoedown, come on, come all, hootenannie. It's another level. I lived in Nashville for 2 years. I know how they roll.
Now you got me dreaming of my birthday 2019 because I'm for sure calling it a hootenanny. I don't have time to do it between now and tomorrow. But yeah, so tomorrow morning, Jesse, we're doing a brunch. Some friends are doing a brunch and we're swimming.
More hoedown stuff.
Yeah, more hoedown. We're leaning hoedown versus hootenanny.
Jesse,
this year.
They're going to the Cracker Barrel.
No, I wish you were going to the Cracker Barrel. But no. So we're like, you know, y'all know this about me, but one of my very favorite things is my friend's kids. And so one of the things I've loved to do for my birthday the last few years is make the kids celebrate me.
It's a forced celebration.
Forced celebration where kids cannot get in the pool until they hug me and say happy birthday. And then they're allowed to swim. That's what we'll do. But next year, Hootenanny.
And everyone listening to this is invited. That's what makes it a hootenanny.
That's the truth. Because I think one of my favorite things about my birthday is I can make anyone hang out with anyone else for that 2-hour window. Mm-hmm. Like I get to decide who's there. And so all my friends have to be friends with my friends, which is my favorite thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I've never thrown myself a birthday party. That's an interesting opportunity though to blend your friend groups.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I do it. It's because I'm like, this is my chance to make everyone meet each other that I've been dying to have meet each other anyway. And we just go to a public place so we can hootin' Annie as much as we want.
Love it.
I like to throw my own birthday parties, but I also like to DJ them. So it's like, you all mingle, but don't talk to me. I'm busy.
Because you're an introvert, right?
Yeah, I am.
That's really interesting. So, Andre, when's your birthday?
March 9th.
Oh, we missed it. Yeah. We'll catch it next time around.
For sure.
That's interesting though.
Yeah, I put on the jams, everybody dances, but I'm too busy to talk to people because I'm doing that.
That's brilliant. It's you great. Literally have a table between you and your yes. people. It's small talk.
Perfect thing.
Like, I can't small talk. I'm busy, but thanks yeah. for coming. I'm so glad to see you.
Yes, so wait, exactly. hold on. Did you say, Andre, that your birthday parties are like a book signing sort of? You sit at a table and they can just make their way over to yeah. wish you salutations?
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, yeah. Thank you for coming.
But like you have people walking around with like cheese platters and cocktails. Meanwhile, you're just at a table. You'll take them one at a time.
No, I'm DJing. So no, like the people are dancing.
Yeah. Mine's like a very, very formal book signing. and then at some point in the night, I demand everyone leave.
Do you sell things, Jesse?
Oh yeah. I mean, mine's basically a ploy to make a few bucks. It's like a yard sale.
You'll sign anything they buy from you?
What's up?
You'll sign anything they buy from you?
Yeah, exactly. And for a slight upcharge, but yes, I will.
The thing I remember, like, you know, like in the club world, I mean, I wasn't ever part of it, mm-hmm, but you know, mm-hmm, you'd see the flyers on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You know, like big rappers will throw themselves birthday parties right. at the clubs, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the most impressive birthday party I've ever known is Chandler Strang would throw himself club parties.
Oh,
he would have a night at a club that he was, you know, the door guy, or he's booking for this club or whatever.
I worked at venues and booked shows.
Yeah. And so he would throw himself Chandler Strang birthday blowouts.
Yeah. If it was like middle of the week, there, you know, it's a hard night to fill.
Right.
So
right.
I would just,
oh my gosh, Chandler, that sounds so fun. You just throw a huge, like, you take over a club?
Yeah.
He's being so chill about how epic his birthday parties are, apparently.
Because this year, didn't y'all just go bowling or something? Roller skating?
Yeah, I don't work at venues anymore, so I don't have the connect, but...
My, how the prideful have fallen. From the coolest birthday ever to literally the saddest. Roller skating rink parties are lame when you're a kid, and much less a full-grown man.
Yeah.
At that point, it's almost a red flag.
Yeah, right. Jesse, when y'all talked about Chandler's birthday and you said that y'all played red light, green light when you were little?
Yeah.
In that game, I don't remember ever playing that. I remember doing the hokey pokey, though. The hokey pokey is the thing I remember finding terribly challenging on roller skates.
Yeah. Well, your feet weigh like an extra 4 pounds.
That is terrifying.
Like every time you got to put your left foot in and shake it all about, you're risking like an ankle
right,
turn.
Yeah.
You have like a giant roller skate. Like that seems like literally the most dangerous game you could play on roller skates. It's the only one more dangerous, like Red Rover, where you're just getting more speed and everyone's on wheels, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Man, I'm just picturing Red Rover in a roller skating rink, and that seems so dangerous.
You know, this is random, but like every once in a while, I see signs for a roller derby, like around town. Like there's like roller derbies that you can go watch. I want to watch, but I also want to participate.
Yeah.
Like roller derby, it always fascinates me that roller derby like went out of style. Like people aren't into roller derby. Yeah.
Well, they're into it here in Nashville. My friend Morgan's on the team, was on the Nashville roller girls,
and
I think they're called.
So
theoretically,
seriously,
it's an awesome sport. I mean, you're going in a circle. It's like in a race, but you're allowed to like tackle people and stuff. Like in theory, it's the perfect sport.
It's like roller skating meets wrestling or something like that.
Wow.
Like how did baseball make it? And I love baseball, but I can't watch roller derby at any point. Like it's never on TV, you know?
It used to be when we were little. Do y'all remember watching it when you were little? I remember watching it.
I think that was just your regional Nashville station that aired that.
I was in Atlanta back then, dude.
That's right.
Well, yeah. Don't burn me on my birthday week.
Big difference.
Across
big difference.
Well, yeah. In several cities across the South, they do have a cable station that's all roller derby. It's premium.
All
it's
day. Like,
it's, they call it Alabama HBO, and all it is roller. And you pay an extra $15 a month.
It's so like that can be the hootenanny next year, is that she rents out a roller rink and it's a roller derby thing. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. It's a good, makes for a good birthday. That's what I learned.
Wait, so you went roller skating on your birthday?
I did. At the Cimarron Skateway.
See, on a very special Southern Charm on Bravo, Shep had a birthday party at the roller rink and it was very lame. They thought it would be like nostalgic.
Yeah.
And they dressed up as like 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot of drama. They were just sitting around having drama.
Other people were dressed up. We did not dress up.
You didn't dress up?
It was only an hour. It was perfect.
I was going to say, like, you probably just skated in this circle for an hour, and then you're like, all right, this was fun.
This brought back memories. They haven't updated the Cimarron Skateway in 30 years.
No, so. I know. Cohen, first and second grade little school year kickoff is at that roller rink.
Right. And right. I think it's the only one in town.
Like I said, when a group of adults walked in, it's kind of a red flag. why are a bunch of grown men here? This is, I don't know. Just keep the police on dial. Just don't, make sure the phone's working. Let's just
say. Not on a Saturday night. Maybe on a weekday.
Like, nothing good comes from like 12 grown men just showing up to a roller skating rink in the middle on like a Saturday afternoon. You know?
Yeah. By the way, what do the employees say when that happens? The employees are probably like, what if there's like a code word? What happens when a bunch of adults show up?
Chandler, did you request any songs? Was there any like special skate music that you wanted?
No, they're just playing oldies. So I didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When I'd go in like fourth grade, which was the last time I think I skated a roller rink, mm-hmm. I remember like it was like a summer camp and we went there a lot, you know, mm-hmm. so you get pretty good by the end of the summer.
Yeah.
Eye of the Tiger was my jam. Like it was like it was old school even then. Yeah. But it was like Eye of the Tiger would come on that and you just start start going and impressing the girls, you know, because you could like scale out faster, you know. It is
funny watching those people who are like good at skating skate around because you know that they think they look so cool.
Let me say this, man. I had a friend in college who got a job as a floor guard. Like that's the name for the referee. You know the guy in the referee shirt with the whistle?
They're called a floor guard?
They're called floor guards, okay? And your job, you get paid, you show up to work, you slip in your referee shirt, you get your whistle, and you're just doing laps literally all day long, just making sure no one's breaking the rules. And there's only a couple rules, you know?
What are the rules?
Well, they have the middle, at least in my experience from rinks growing up, is like the middle. So they have the loop, the middle, where it's like the middle of the loop is kind of taped off. And that's like the practice zone. They don't want you, speeding around in there. That's for you getting your legs under you.
That's where they do the hokey pokey,
the
things
fast skaters
like that.
Go on the outside.
Yeah, that's where you,
Exactly. The loop is where you can really let a rip. You can open it up a little out there, you know, but the floor guard just making sure no one's getting too, you know, you got any hot shots out there. You can put them in the penalty box.
Right.
The floor guard is usually the hot shot. It's his moves that everybody's watching.
I will say this. When my buddy got the job, I was thinking, you know, that's kind of a cool job. I wonder if he'll get old, like being on roller skates for 8 hours a day, just doing endless loops, you know. I went to pick him up from work one time. Yeah, he didn't have a car. So I went in there and he had like a few minutes before he's off. So I was just chilling out up at the concession stand, eating a dog, you know, drinking my gigantic Coke, just waiting for him to get off. He got so good. Like it was the best roller skating I've ever seen. But you got to think, if you're working like 40 hours a week doing nothing but roller skating, you're going to be awesome. You're going to be one of the best skaters in your town.
Really,
like a
floor guard's out of bed. If you're going to practice anything that much, you'll get good.
You're putting in your 10,000 hours there.
Yeah, right. That's right.
That is amazing. I've never, Jesse, did he have any like, did he love it? How long did he just last for the summer?
Yeah, he just lasted for the summer, but no, he absolutely loved it because you're like an authority figure too.
You can jam, you can get the party started, you can show off, and you're an authority figure. Right, I mean, this is the trifecta.
Yes. It's very true.
Exactly. Like before you whistle somebody for, you know, give them a little speeding ticket or whatever, you can ride up and start skating backwards right in their face. Look at them in the eye. Yeah. They're going as fast as your kid. You're casually skating backwards, so never breaking eye contact. You put your whistle in your mouth and you blow that thing as loud as you can, and you point to the side.
And they can always skate backwards, and they can always crisscross their legs real calmly over each other. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, Annie, practice up before your hootenanny next year because I want to see those moves.
At the Nashville. Will you guys come if I throw it at the Nashville skating rink?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, we will.
Hey, if you need a DJ, I'm there.
Oh,
done.
Love it.
Can I request Eye of the Tiger around 45 minutes in?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, because didn't y'all DJ Joy's wedding? Jesse?
It was sort of, it was more MCing. We were MCing the way. I mean, I would have loved if they would have let us choose the music too. But, you know, it was primarily an MC. But if you're asking me to MC/DJ, you better believe it. First up, the Top Gun soundtrack. Everyone. the entire soundtrack. Little American flags. Too.
This would be epic.
I don't know which will come first, my wedding or my hootenanny, but whichever one, y'all are all invited and you can DJ.
Whoa. I mean, we know the hootenanny. The hootenanny is 366 days away.
But she couldn't get married before.
That's what I'm saying.
The fast track, you know? You might meet the right one, just...
Lots of news today on the podcast.
Hold on. Do you know a gentleman who's a potential suitor? I mean, because if not, you're going from introductions to falling in love to being engaged to actual marriage within 365 days. That's fast.
Yep.
She said, yep.
I like it. Annie, the offer's on the table, the MC/DJ. And hey, if you want to have, you know, what'd be sweet is a reception at a roller skate.
I was about to say, let's combine them.
Okay. Cause the best part of the reception is always when the MC does the introductions for the groomsmen and the bridesmaid, and they get to do their, like, they always, it's kind of become a cliche at this point, something. Right? They plan, you know, oh, look, they're doing a fake Matrix fight scene out there. She's a fisherman. She's reeling in. We've seen it. Okay. Oh, look, Night at the Roxbury. Long time since I've seen that movie. Okay. We've seen them all at this point, right? What I haven't seen is them to attempt any of those on roller skates.
On wheels. That's exactly right.
Yeah. It'd be dope though, seeing all your friends dressed up and skating. Oh man.
I mean,
oh my gosh, skating in a long gown.
Can we go back to the fact that you're thinking about a wedding already? Who is there a gentleman caller that we don't know about?
You just have to be prepared in case.
Karen,
it happens.
I tell you everything. Don't panic. 365 days is a lot of days.
That's true.
Hey, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to author Rachel Held Evans. She's joining us. And we also have our listener of the week coming up at the end of the show. Big, great one this week. Lots of suspense. Very excited.
Can't wait.
But first, it's time for...
Slices!
What do you have, Jesse?
So, Cameron, while people are listening to this, you and I are going to be getting into some hangover-style antics in the great city of Las Vegas.
That is not...
Have hangover antics
that
afterwards?
Is not my plans. But yes, Jesse and I, on the day this show's coming out, we're flying to Las Vegas because the NBA Summer League is in Vegas this year. So all 30 teams are there for the first time. The Orlando Magic's playing on Friday and Sunday. And, you know, we have friends with the team. And so they're like, you should come to Summer League. And so we're going to Summer League.
Sweet.
And we're staying at the same hotel as several of the teams.
Wow.
We're going to see basketball. Our friend Brent, who's a big Oklahoma City Thunder fan, he's got connections with them and the Nets, kind of pulled in some strings too. So we're going to those games. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Is he coming? Yeah. Is Brent coming?
Brent's coming, man.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It's going to be a great weekend. And we're going to see the Magic. And if you're in Vegas with Jesse, you're also going to see Magic. So I assume I assume we're going to go see a couple Magic shows.
Actual Magic.
And
I'm planning on using this to unwind a little bit and, you know, cut loose Vegas style.
Yeah.
But I will, Cameron, I do think if you have room in your bag, you might want to bring audio equipment in case, you know, there's things that we need to document.
Yeah.
You know?
What does that mean?
A little field recorder.
I can do that. I figure literally 3.5 days with Jesse in Las Vegas is going to be about 2.5 years of podcast material. So,
I'm spending one full day just observing the different street performers. I mean, they alone, you know, like, I can't believe that guy's not a copper statue. Are you kidding me?
Literally at staff meeting last week, I was talking about travel coming up and whatever. And I mentioned that we're going to Vegas, and Jesse says to staff meeting, he goes, "It's a weekend to suspend disbelief and to believe in magic and also the magic.
Just for one weekend, Cameron, I am asking you to suspend your disbelief and believe in the power of magic." So, hey, Chandler, in post, do some dramatic music there. It's way cooler. Real magicians, at that point, when they say that, there's a poof of smoke. There is a deeply unbuttoned white dress shirt, and there's dramatic David Copperfield style.
So. Yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah, so while you're listening to this, we will be watching basketball. So there you go.
Sweet.
So I decided to bring a Vegas theme slice just to get the gears turned. Cameron or Annie, you were just in Vegas.
I was just in Vegas. I'm so jealous of y'all. It's so fun.
Have you seen New York, New York? It's like the fake outdoor New York casino. Of course. Yes, so, yes. So anyone who's been, Andre, have you been to Vegas?
I have not.
Okay. So I'll describe it for those who haven't seen it in person. Like there was a time in Vegas, like Vegas is a really interesting place because the strip is constantly being remodeled. Right. And the places that haven't been remodeled kind of show the trends of the era that it went up in. So there was an era probably like 15 years ago where everything was themed, right? There's pirate themed.
In the 90s, they were trying to rebrand Vegas to be more family friendly. And so a lot of the mega resorts that were getting built then were heavily themed and almost cartoonish, you know, but
And now they have like the Wynn and the Aura and stuff that's like
luxury modern. And high end and modern. The current era.
But during the theme era, they built a casino called New York, New York, which has this elaborate, scaled down New York City skyline. So it's got like the Empire State Building. It's got a couple of the iconic buildings that you see in the skyline, but it also has a pseudo replica of the Statue of Liberty right there, right off the strip. So a few years ago, the United States Postal Service was doing their themed postage stamps. And one of them was a tribute to the Statue of Liberty. It was a tribute to Lady Liberty. And so they were looking for a great photo. They found a photo of the face of the Statue of Liberty. They put it on a stamp. The stamp became extremely popular. So much so, guess how many of the Statue of Liberty themed stamps the U.S. Postal Service sold?
Who knows?
Oh gosh, I wouldn't even have.
I mean, how do they do? How many do they do on a normal one?
10 or 10,000? I don't know.
Not even close, Cameron. This was shocking. This is the most shocking part of this.
Okay, so you're talking about a specific stamp. Nobody buys stamps anymore. I'm going to go 5,000.
Andre, what's your guess?
I feel like it's got to be an outlandish number.
Right.
I was dumbfounded.
Like hundreds of thousands, right? Millions.
They sold of the Lady Liberty stamp alone. This is completely bonkers to me. The only way that it makes sense is if I ever have to go to the postal. Like the other day, I had a package go to the wrong, my old house address, and it got rerouted. I had to go to the post office to pick it up. And there was a line like out the door. If you ever go to the post office, there's always a line. People are always at the post office for some reason. They sold 4.9 billion.
No.
What?
They
no.
Printed 10 billion and they sold half of them. The Lady Liberty stamp. 4.9 billion of them.
I'm not sure.
Who approved printing 10 billion of those?
Billions? Yeah.
So they sold almost 5 billion of these Lady Liberty themed stamps. But someone along the way noticed as what looked like a mistake that the picture they used of the Statue of Liberty wasn't the real Statue of Liberty. It was the one off the Vegas Strip from New York. Easy mistake to make. Anyone could have done it. But they later admitted we just did a Getty image search and picked one we liked.
Oh my God.
Not realizing it was the one from Vegas.
Goodness.
The artist that is behind New York, New York, behind that fixture on the Vegas Strip, said, hey, the face that I use, so it's a picture only of the Statue of Liberty's face. The face isn't the real face from the Statue of Liberty. That's a composite of actual women in my family, and it looks notably different than the real Statue of Liberty, which I'm looking at it, and I wouldn't know the difference. Like, I'm looking just at the face, and I wouldn't know that's not the face of the Statue of Liberty. Oh. But he said, because of that, you owe me royalties, because you use my sculpture, my artwork, on a stamp that sold 5 billion copies.
Wow.
So they argued, well, it looks kind of like Lady Liberty. He's like, no, this is a composite of women I know. And it looks just like the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, my God.
So he took it to a judge. The judge decided the guy has a point, and that the Postal Service now owes him royalties.
on 4 billion stamps.
Yeah. Wow. So this guy, because of that stamp, I guess stamps only cost like a few cents. So like you would 50. Think 4.0 billion. Yeah. So, but you would think 4.9 billion stamps would equal like a, it's still a lot of money, but it's not like you're collecting all of it. You're just collecting a small royalty. Either way, the Postal Service has to cut him a check for $3.5 million.
My God.
Because they did a bad Getty search.
Goodness. That's an amazing story. Like, when you started that story, I was like, I don't know, is this going to be interesting? And it just kept getting like more suspenseful and better as it went
on. Hey, good for that guy, though. Good for that guy. Hey, the Postal Service, because if they were to pay for imagery on a stamp that was so popular, sold 5 billion copies, I mean, you know, $3.5 million seems relatively, you know.
And the stamp is of the face. And so you can see up close.
Yeah, you can see right up close. Like, wow. There's no question that it's, if you were to say, no, that's the real one. It's like, no, this is the one the guy designed, and he's getting $3.5 million for it. So, I mean, good for that dude, though.
Yeah. You know?
And good for someone for noticing, too.
Oh, my God.
Because who knows? That could have gone for a long time.
Yeah.
Because the other thing is, like, I don't remember last time I have purchased a stamp. I don't remember last time. I don't even know. Like, you could ask me, you got it mail today. Does any of them have stamps on them? I honestly wouldn't know the answer. Like, I don't know if my mail has stamps. Usually it's just the little thing they print on them now.
Yeah.
I didn't know stamps were like still a thing.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. So if you're an artist out there, you might want to check like the bald eagle commemorative stamp or whatever, because there's a good
chance. Make sure it's not your bald eagle.
The guy designing him at the Postal Service is incredibly lazy and just does a Getty search and be like, oh, I guess that one will work. Well, so I mean, it could be your bald eagle.
I mean, this is consistent with the Shepherd Fairey Obama Hope poster situation. I mean, when that artist, you know, like took the photo of Obama and then, you know, and then Shepherd Fairey recreated that poster, the original photographer sued him, and saying use my artwork and stuff like that. And this is similar. I mean, it's like you can't go create other art using somebody else's asset, you know, even if you kind of modify
without compensation.
Yeah, without compensation or permission.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And if it's a Getty search, you have to pay for Getty images, right? So they probably paid for
I mean, the license, you know, again, what license did they purchase?
Right,
exactly. Did they actually purchase it really to sell a commercial product that'll sell 5 billion units, you know?
Yeah.
Probably not.
My answer to that is probably not if they're not careful enough to even check if it's the real Statue of Liberty.
Well, the thing that they probably got the right license for the photo, and the photographer got paid the license fee, but the thing that was being photographed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a totally different thing.
Because he said it's an artwork that's being profited, you know.
It's like if they took a picture of the Mona Lisa, put it on a stamp, and the photographer's the one who got paid, you know. I mean, like, the actual artwork is what the stamp's about.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, so good for that guy.
All right, what do you have, Annie? Do you have an English-based, American-based slice?
No, this is completely Chinese-based. No, this is American-based. This is actually, that's a great lead-in, Cameron. This is world-based, my slice for today. I feel like one of the things we may have done in the last few weeks is underserved our soccer-loving community. And so,
hold on. Before we get into that, can I just say I tried. I was watching some highlights online, and I saw the most dramatic flops I've ever seen. I saw one guy like get brushed, and he literally, I will, maybe we can tweet this out when this drops. The guy literally hit the ground and rolled. They counted 8 times.
Whoa.
He just like end over end. Yeah. And he was screaming the whole time, but he's clearly propelling himself, just rolling around.
For sure.
Like I couldn't, it's like, okay, this isn't fun. Like this is like WWE status right now.
He's the worst. He's the worst. I am with you. But listen, this is the right weekend for everybody to jump in, because now all the riffraff is gone, if you will call that what has happened. It's been amazing. I've loved every minute of it. But now we're down to just 8 teams. Mm. And so starting tomorrow, the birthday day, you're going to have just the fine. This is the finals. This is the semifinals, quarterfinals, finals. We're there. So this is the right time for people to jump in. But I have a slice that will tell you not only why is it important that we watch the World Cup, but it's not just for entertainment. It's also for education, you guys, because there was a guy named Dale Chessman who was watching the World Cup, and his grandmother has worn the same t-shirt for 25 years on the 4th of July. It's a cute little shirt. On the top, Let me do my math right. On the top right,
quadrants, right?
Yeah, there's four quadrants to the shirt. On the top right is a blue star. On the top left is red stripes. On the bottom right is blue stripes. On the bottom left is a red star. So it's like this beautiful American thing. She has worn this shirt for 25 years on 4th of July, which I think is really impressive that she can find it every year. I don't know that I'd be able to do that, wear the same thing 25 years. But she's worn the same shirt. And Dale was watching the World Cup and he realized that his grandmother's shirt is actually the flag for the country of Panama. That's literally the flag of Panama.
I love someone on Twitter said it was 25 years of treason.
Yeah. Like,
celebrating Panama on the 4th of July for two and a half decades.
She had no idea. And it was because he was watching the World Cup. It was Panama's first time ever playing in the World Cup, which is, y'all need to go back and Google this, or we can drop this maybe on Twitter too, Jesse. But they have this video of the announcers from Panama the first time they played the Panamanian national anthem during the World Cup. And they're just like bawling and hugging each other. It's so sweet. But because of that, the Panama flag was in the World Cup for the first time ever. And they realized that grandma's been wearing the Panamanian flag every year.
I'm sorry. I can't do a sport where there's tears and there's guys rolling around acting like they got shot if they got bumped. I can't do it. I watch it for emotional detachment. I want to check out. I want to see.
I'm going to text you this whole rest of the World Cup, and I'm going to keep you engaged and entertained with the last little piece of this soccer tournament.
I want emotionalist. I want emotionalist, you know, stoic. The most I want to see emotion is the other range. I want to see like LeVar Ball antics. Like I want to see hype men. I don't want to see tears. Life has enough heart, you know, emotion in it. I want to see cold emotionalist hype.
There you go. Okay, what do you have, Andre?
I have brought the story of Mamadou Gassama. He was a Malian migrant in Paris, and he became famous when he saved a toddler from almost falling to its death from a building.
He climbed up.
Exactly. Yeah. He climbed four floors, jumping from terrace to terrace, pulling himself up the side of this building to save this toddler who was dangling from a terrace, and won the name or earned the name of Spider-Man around Paris. And recently he just joined the Paris Fire Brigade, which is, you know, when they saw this act of courage, they offered him a job, and he's just started this week. What's interesting about it too is, well, first off, that the dad of that toddler's in hot water because he was apparently out playing Pokemon Go at the time. So
yeah. Chandler,
I told you it's older people.
Yeah, he was out playing Pokemon Go.
Older it's people, the dad father, of a, dad of a toddler could be in his mid-20s.
Yeah. No, I know, but I mean like adults that are into.
Yeah, it's not Pokemon a kid's game.
Anymore. Right, exactly. It's not like teenagers.
It never really was, to be honest.
Yeah. So he's in trouble. What's also interesting is that Mamadou Gassama was offered citizenship in Paris, which is great for him, but also migrant rights activists are bringing up the conversation too. Like, you know, this shouldn't just be an exceptional case, you know, because the migrant policies in France are not that open. So we're saying like, it's great that this guy did something heroic and it's great that he got citizenship. But what about all these other people who are trying to make it into this country? Like, this is an example of, you know, the humanity of these people that are coming in. Like, it's not just, you know, a lot of rhetoric around, you know, immigrants and throughout time and in different countries has been, oh, these foreign people are going to come in here and commit crimes and steal our jobs and stuff like that.
Well,
and
Paris had the bombing scares, you know, right? from foreigners, you know, right. So is that when they kind of like closed up shop?
I'm not sure of like how the policies changed and when, but migrant rights activists are saying, you know, even so, right? Like all migrants aren't, you know, going to come in here and blow up things or stuff like that, you know, like that kind of thing emergence. And so it's an interesting story and conversation that's happening around that.
Yeah.
And especially like the video of him scaling the side of a building, like literally it's just this dude in street clothes
that
see a toddler hanging off like a balcony. And he honestly looks like a superhero.
Yeah.
He just standing on the street. There's a huge crowd on the street. And you see this guy climbing up the side of a building.
He sprung to action without even really thinking very much, right? It's like when you see it on the video, he's like, he just looks up and he's just up the building.
I mean, that's the only way you do stuff like that is if you do it without thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just assume that everybody in Paris can do that, though, because that's where parkour is from. And I've seen those videos.
Yeah, and last time I checked, parkour is a French word, parkour. You know, here's the other thing I'm curious about. I would have thought that they teach that at a young age. I don't know how I feel about this toddler. He should have just been able to backflip his way down to safety.
Yeah. All French people can do parkour. That's just, it's in their blood.
But I wonder, too, if you're like a fireman and they know you can do that. They're like, hey, listen, it's going to take like 10 minutes to get the ladder. You know, we saw Kramer drive the fire truck through the busy streets of New York. It takes a while to get the ladder truck, especially in like a big city, to where it needs to be. Can we just send that guy and just have him, you know, just do a superhero thing and just save us ladder time? I mean, he can just literally walk up the side of a building. I think it's obviously it's a great hire.
Perfect. Yeah, he's really put himself in a situation that he's going to have to keep doing that over and over again. They're like, we literally gave you a job because you can climb buildings without any apparatus around you.
He's
so
definitely
go.
Raised the bar of what a fireman is supposed to do, right?
Right. but it is, to Andy's point, it's like for the rest of his life, that's his party trick. I mean, they're going to be like, hey, you know, like he's going to be stuck having to be, you're the guy who can climb up the wall. It's like the yodeling kid from Walmart, you know, the rest of his life, he's going to, hey, yodel, you know, like poor guy.
Yeah. I hope
he's making some money too. Or if y'all, I mean, he's like, he's all over Nashville. His new song's real
the
cute.
The yodeling kid?
Yeah.
Yes, he's got a real record deal. And a record deal and he plays at the Opry. Wow. I mean, he's like literally 2 minutes in Walmart and now he's made more money than I'm ever going to make.
That kid is like, is there any more an American dream than you can sing at the end of an aisle at a Walmart, go viral on Twitter, sing at Coachella, and land like eventually he'll have like a reality show. That's like the modern American dream. That is peaking in America right there. It has everything you need. Walmart, Twitter, viral video.
And then ending at the Opry.
And a bolo. Yeah. He wore a bolo tie in that video, didn't he?
Like, haven't seen a bolo in a while.
You know, but he's bringing it back.
He wears
Walmart
it all the time.
Yeah, it's a shtick.
Yeah,
parkour guy.
Bolo's due to come back, by the way. I want to show up to a formal event where everyone's wearing ties and I come in with a bolo.
We'll next year's new nanny, bolo required.
Yeah. The last time I saw a bolo was in Royal Rangers. Are you familiar?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes. The AG's version of Boy Scouts.
Exactly, Annie. That is exactly. That is what
it
is.
Wait, hold on. I'm not familiar with this.
The Assemblies of God has its own type of Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts kind of
group. So
groups.
The only thing nerdier than the Boy Scouts
is the Christian Boy Scouts. Right.
They are called the Royal Rangers.
But the Baptists had Awana, so the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
So, because Awana, you don't wear outfits and stuff, do you?
The Awana, school I went to, they did. They look like brownies and stuff. I mean,
yeah,
really.
They had Awana uniforms.
Yeah, so you have uniforms, and a part of the Royal Ranger uniform is a bolo.
That's right.
Do you have pictures of you in a bolo?
I do not.
Do you remember
want
the?
To tell
do you remember the Royal Ranger creed?
I remember a lot of it.
Ready work, for anything. Play. Ready to work, play, serve, obey, worship, live, etc. Yeah. Part of the creed was the word etc.
etc.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, what are we shoving into the etc. What am I signing up for with the etc.?
Got to keep it ambiguous so that you know just things, just whatever comes up in the moment.
One more time. Say the whole thing one more time to me.
Ready to work, play, serve, obey, worship, live, etc. Ready to live.
Oh, can I be honest too?
Like, the guy just trailed off at the end. Whoever wrote that just trailed off at the end.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a fun recreational thing. None of those items you said sounded fun. Work, serve, worship. Look, they're good. For fun?
All
this
fun
sounds terrible.
At a certain level, you could carry like a pocket knife,
which when
you're 9 years old is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nine is when you went from buckaroos to pioneers.
Right.
Yep.
And when you're a pioneer, you can cut and chop card.
Yeah.
Get a knife and bring it to church on Wednesday nights.
Yeah. You learn how to build a fire and cook, you know.
Yeah. You'd have
jamborees. Chandler, at some point in your life, you literally had a rank of buckaroo in something called the Royal Rangers, which is a knockoff Boy Scouts, which required you to wear a bolo. I am surprised that you didn't get wedgies every day.
Did you? Have you ever asked him? Maybe he did.
Well, I didn't walk around school like in my Royal Ranger uniform.
I went to the elementary school of the church. So like, you know, being a buckaroo was a cool thing.
So it was the Wednesday night church program for the kids. So it's like parents would be a Wednesday night service, and then the kids would go to Royal Rangers and Missionettes.
Yeah.
That was the girl one, Missionettes.
Yep. Missionettes.
Yeah. Missionettes? Yeah. You are... This
and then
isn't,
you had like, you had like camping.
I can't believe you guys didn't know about this.
Yeah, that is specifically an Assemblies of God thing. Yeah.
I'm surprised you guys are even still in the faith, to be honest. it only is a power to the gospel. Life changing power of the gospel. But you guys still want to be a part of this thing.
The worst was like the high school kids. Because like the thing about the Wednesday night, you know, Royal Rangers, like you kind of, it's an elementary thing. Up to maybe early middle, but then you go on to youth group. You know, like you're done with it, you outgrow it.
Yeah.
The worst was like the AG version of the Eagle Scout kid who like was the high school kid who was still in Royal Rangers and took it way too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, even as an 8 or 9 year old, I was kind of going, that guy's not cool. You know what I mean?
He had his badges. His first one says homeschool badge.
There definitely is an overlap there where you're like you're entering high school, and like if you're going into like wherever they're teaching Royal Rangers and you hear like the cool like rock music coming from the youth group where it's like, what am I doing?
Yeah. But that was the thing. It's like, I've put in so many years. I have so many badges now. Yeah. I got to see this through. You know, it's like, no, dude, you just go to youth group, man. Yeah. Like, you just got to hang up the bolo.
I got
to
see this.
That's
different than an Eagle Scout. I mean, it's not cool per se, but that's pretty respectable when you make it all the way through. You've built your own gazebo or something.
I mean, after Eagle Scout, you're going to ROTC and then, you know, maybe a military. You could see that you're equipping yourself towards something.
Yeah. But, I know Eddie's not on. He would, and that's fine because I don't need a rebuttal. But like, my problem with the Eagle Scouts, they want me to treat them like they're SEAL Team 6 or something. It's like, the pinnacle of your career was when you built the gazebo at the senior citizens' home. That was the culmination of all these years, was your final project. Which honestly, you know, like you spent most of that time like building birdhouses and, you know, picking up litter. Like, this is not the same as like elite military units. Like, if I could choose to be lost in the woods with the average Eagle Scout or just the average random Joe who's seen Man vs. Wild, I'm probably going average Joe because at least they're not going to give me false hope.
Are you picking an Eagle Scout or a Royal Ranger?
Either. Just put me out there.
I'd rather be alone.
I'd probably rather be alone because all you're going to do is you're going to waste all our time trying to tie like weird knots and stuff. Like this is pointless.
If you're really into it, like you can learn some stuff that might actually help you if you end up stranded in the woods or something like that.
But when is that going to happen? Is it worth your entire youth? Is it worth your entire youth for the off chance you're going to get lost in the woods one day?
Hey, I'll tell you this. I it's something to do on a Wednesday night while parents are at church, first of all. Second of all, to prepare for the big jamboree every year, you know, you had to get some badges and stuff.
Yeah.
I remember having to get my knot tying badge.
Uh-huh.
And decades later, when I acquired a boat,
yep,
I remembered the knots.
Yeah.
And I didn't look like a fool on the dock. I could throw the rope around.
Do you have Cohen in all these things? Yeah. Is Cohen a Royal Ranger?
No, we don't go to an AG church. So,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Cameron. How many years were you in Royal Rangers?
Honestly, I'm going maybe third to fourth, second to fourth. It was not long. It was probably 2 years. I straddled Buckaroo to Pioneer. I did dip my toe in the Pioneer pool. Uh-huh. Felt cool.
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing. If it was 2 to 3 years of your youth, and the big takeaway now as an adult is you can tie a couple boat knots. I could probably watch a YouTube video on the boat. What knot is here? Oh yeah, just put it over there. Oh, got it done. Gosh. And I had those years of my youth back.
Well, hey, I mean, my dad wasn't outdoorsy. He wasn't going to show me how to wield a knife or tie a knot. So you know, it was nice to learn from some of the men in the church how to take care of myself and start a campfire, things like that. To this day, my arsonry stuff started because I learned how to build a proper campfire at the Jamboree. And so I was like, I know how, hey, in Montana, I was building the campfires because you got to get the airflow.
And you almost killed us.
Sure. I actually did.
Almost started a wildfire.
That's actually true.
That's just me, pointing back at, I don't know what they're teaching in those buckaroos.
Yeah.
The other thing too, is if they're teaching how to wield knives, trust me from experience, you can learn that on YouTube as well. There's a lot of amateur knife wielding videos. A lot. Hey, when we get the video podcast going, I'm going to start having like a YouTube segment, and we're going to watch a couple things. And the first one is going to be this guy in his backyard with a sword showing you how to evade like an attacker then hack him right in half. It is fantastic. It's like a cardboard cutout he has in his backyard. And he's just running, screaming at the thing over and over again, showing you techniques. I don't need to be a buckaroo to learn that. Okay. Hey, you might know how to work like a 2-inch Swiss Army knife. I'm getting katana lessons on YouTube. Thank you.
Amy, what denomination did you grow up in?
Methodist.
Okay, so that's why you didn't know Awana or
Missionettes. So we didn't do it. I mean, we had VBS, but we didn't do any of the things with outfits per se.
Right. Mm. Interesting. And Jesse, you were non-denom.
Yeah, non-denom. So we had, again, our big thing was like the Holy Ghost weenie roast at Halloween.
The Holy Ghost what?
Weenie roast on Halloween. They didn't have a harvest party. They had a Holy Ghost weenie roast.
Yeah.
We always had a harvest party that time of year.
Yeah, we had trunk or treat back in the day.
Yeah, we had something like that.
Yeah. All right, well, that'll do it for Slices. Stay tuned. Up next, Rachel Held Evans joins us. You're listening to Mainland. The song is Hometown. At the beginning of the podcast, you heard Han with I Got You featuring Nana Rogues. Rachel Held Evans is a popular writer and speaker, and in her latest book, Inspired, Slang Giants, Walking on Water, and Loving the Bible Again, she discusses coming out of a season of doubt and the deconstruction of her faith and embracing scripture and faith all over again. We recently talked with Rachel about her journey and how all Christians can learn to love the Bible. Here is Rachel Held Evans.
I guess I'm mostly just interested in kind of your story and what led to your book. Like, at what point did you decide, like, I think this is the next book for me. I think that the Bible is going to be the next topic I really want to handle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it just felt really natural since Searching for Sunday was about church and rediscovering church. I kind of wanted to write a book about the Bible too. Mm-hmm. I think I'm kind of in the process of, deconstructing and reconstructing is not necessarily too clear-cut, distinct activities that you engage in. But I do think I'm kind of in the process of, after years of really deconstructing my faith and wrestling with a lot of doubts and questions, I do feel like I'm starting to rebuild a little bit. And I feel like a lot of other millennials, Gen Xers are in the same position where they've cast aside some stuff, but they want to hold on to their faith. So what does that mean? What does that mean for how they think about church, and what does that mean for how they think about and engage the Bible? So it just kind of felt like a natural thing to write about. And also I was encountering all those really awesome biblical scholarship that I had just not been exposed to before, from Walter Brueggemann to womanist biblical scholars to Jewish midrashic interpretations of the Bible that were just completely rocking my world and changing how I approach the Bible. I really felt compelled to share that with my readers because it was that scholarship was making the Bible readable to me again and exciting and interesting to me again. And so I felt like it was an important thing to try and share in like a creative, fun sort of way.
Could you do a little like compare and contrast from how you were like raised to think about the Bible versus what the reconstruction process of looking at the Bible has been like?
Yeah. I mean, I was raised, to when I was a child, of course, I loved just the Bible stories and engaging them, and you know, was just fascinated by the stories of Jonah and Moses and Mary Magdalene and all of that. And then, you know, when I became a teenager and young adult, the message I got from sort of the evangelical culture was that the Bible was always being threatened. The Bible was constantly under threat. And so the goal is to, you know, learn the Bible, study the Bible, and then defend the Bible. And I will say, I was like crazy, and still am, I'm kind of a Bible nerd. Like, I was the president of the Bible club in high school, which, you know, made me super cool. So, you know, this is like my life. I memorized large portions of the book of Romans before I was 11. You know, I was really, really in it. I represented the Bible club on the homecoming court in high school. So it was kind of like one of those equal opportunity, everybody gets to be on homecoming court thing. So all the clubs had somebody represent, so I got to represent the Bible club. But so that was like, I was a complete Bible nerd.
You were a nerd.
Obsessed with the Bible, memorized it, you know, defended at all costs. And, you know, but then when I was in college, and soon after graduating from college, I just started questioning a lot of what I'd been told about the Bible, you know, that it was historically and scientifically accurate, that the, you know, Genesis 1 was a historical and scientific text, and they needed to defend the earth as being 6,000 years old. You know, that sort of stuff began to just kind of unravel. Being a woman and reading the Bible can be challenging, because there's a lot of, you know, the Bible is written in a highly patriarchal culture. Mm-hmm. And so it, there's a lot of assumptions about women and women's roles that were tripping me up as well. So it's like, I grew up learning that the Bible needed to be defended, that it was inerrant in the sense that, and people usually, when they use that word, they mean that it's a scientific and historical document that, you know, needs to be defended as such. But then, you know, as I started, you know, after the faith kind of fell apart and started rebuilding, yeah, began, I think the critical turning point for me was understanding that the Bible is not just one book. This sounds kind of obvious, but yeah, the Bible is this library of books. Like, it's a collection of stories and poems and letters and laws and philosophy, proverbs, the traditions, all these different genres, you know, spanning thousands of years, written by multiple authors, all, you know, put together as part of scripture. So yeah, when I once I began to think of it more in terms of as a collection of stories and a collection of writings, each with different, representing different genres, kind of turned things around. I really feel like understanding that there are a variety of genres in the Bible makes a huge difference, and that some of those genres are like ancient Near Eastern types of genres that we don't have easily comparable genres today. Right. So yeah, that's kind of a rambling way to say that grew up believing that the Bible was all one genre and that was God's infallible truth. And then, you know, recently, and in the last few years, really coming to terms with the fact that a variety of genres are represented. If you want to take the Bible seriously, you have to respect the various genres that are there. You know, just because there's poetry and just because there's letters doesn't make it untrustworthy. You know, it just means that God chose to communicate through those kinds of genres too. And so understanding, like, for instance, Genesis 1, is not really meant to be a scientific or historical explanation for how the world came to be, how the universe came to be. Mm-hmm. It's a much more of a creation story meant to explain how God, how Yahweh is different from the Babylonian gods, and how this God doesn't need a temple made of stone. This God has made the entire cosmos a temple. Like, that's a lot more interesting to me, and it's much more faithful to what I think the author's intended.
So what do you say, because I'm sure you've heard this critique, I've heard this critique my whole life, that if you start looking at the Bible that way, you're diminishing its value, its importance, or even diminishing, like, the word of God, you know, like you're right, lessening the importance on it. What's the response?
Yeah, well, I think that's just, it's actually a really sort of self-centered way of reading the Bible, frankly. The notion that God can only communicate truth through modern understandings of science and history is really just centering, you know, Western, typically white American concerns in our reading of Scripture, when the Bible wasn't even, you know, these passages weren't even originally written for people like us. Mm-hmm. They were written for ancient people, you know, who had ancient assumptions about cosmology and had concerns, different concerns than we have today. Doesn't mean that we can't still learn a lot from it about who God is and what God is like, but the notion that, like, it has to fit into, the Bible has to answer our questions about cosmology and has to line up with our understanding of science and history, it's just a really sort of self-centered way of reading the Bible. And so I think it diminishes God a lot more to say that God has to communicate using science and history or law than it does to say that God, as God tends to do, stoops and uses, you know, poetry mm-hmm. and letters and ancient creation myths to communicate because God wants to be understood. And so that, you know, those people for whom the Bible was first written and composed and assembled, they matter too, you know, and, and how they view the world matter too. It's not just about us. So, yeah, I don't think it diminishes the Bible at all to take seriously the variety of genres that are represented there. I think that's how we honor the Bible, is kind of reading it and engaging it on its own terms instead of always putting ourselves in the center of our readings and always putting our pet interests and our questions there. Yeah, I think God's doing a lot more with this text than people give it credit for.
That was Rachel Held Evans. Up next, our listener of the week. You're listening to Inner Wave. The song is Whoa, featuring Bane's World. Okay, it's time for our Listener of the Week.
You listen to the show, and it's time to get to know you. It's the Listener of the Week.
Okay, Jesse, as we're scrolling Twitter, looking at all the facts that our listeners are sending in about themselves to be the Listener of the Week, what caught our eye about our Listener of the Week, Brandy Eichberger?
Well, can I be completely honest with you here? I was fascinated. What caught my eye, Brandy, was your fantastic last name, because for years I was wanting to build an Eisenhower themed burger restaurant.
Well, welcome to the show, Brandy Eichberger.
Hi, guys.
Brandy, what is the origin of your last name?
Well, I got married to a German man. So he is the origin.
Do you think he would be open to, I was going to call it I Like Eichberger, but we can just go down to Eichberger. Do you think he would be down to like help with that?
I told him that if we got married, that we would need a burger recipe. So we're already halfway there.
Hey, already there. So Brandy, before we get to your three facts, where are you calling us from?
I'm from Minneapolis.
Minneapolis.
Okay.
Lovely this time of year.
Yes. Beautiful.
Okay. So the three facts, Jesse, number one, I married a man I met through heating vents. That's number one.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be very disappointed if literally in heating events, like this is a scene out of Die Hard. Like you were frying
That's what I was hoping.
Number two, we'll get to that. Number two, I received, took and stole 216 cans of Monster energy drink. Number three, the police found a plastic scythe and bunny mask in my trunk while searching my car in my high school parking lot. And number four, we got a bonus fact.
Bonus.
I once put my principal's car on Craigslist. So
hey, can I, before you go into these facts, I'm really hoping they're all related. Like this was all, each one of these was some element of a Monster Energy drink heist. Like it involved you crawling through the vents of like a convenience store, wearing a bunny mask, meeting your husband who was also weirdly doing a Monster Energy drink heist, and then disposing of the evidence, which was your stolen principal's car by putting it on Craigslist. Did I crack this one?
Not quite, but close. It's very close.
All right. So tell us about the heating vents, meeting your husband through meeting him through heating vents. What's the story there?
Yeah. So I went to a college in Minneapolis called North Central University. It's a Christian school. And when I was a freshman, my husband lived in the room below me, and we have like bro sis floors, and we were rivals. They called us the Three West Heifers because they would always hear us walking around, and they called us cows because of it.
Oh my goodness.
That's right.
Bible school guys are cruel.
Not okay.
That's not okay.
Especially coming from someone named Ike Berger, because if anything, he had the heifer related last name with
very
the
true. That's right. True. That's right. True. But we called them the Two West Tools. So we were in this rivalry. And so we would always yell at each other through the vents. And like I would always yell, I was a freshman, so please don't judge me. But I would always yell, tell me that I'm pretty. And he would say, I can't say that. I don't know what you look like. And I was like, but I'm a daughter of the king. Tell me I'm pretty. Wow. And he just was not having it. And so we did not like each other about that.
Can I just say, if you're picking on a group, which that sounds like that's pretty messed up. It sounds like your nickname for that floor was pretty fitting. But like, if someone comes back, but I'm a daughter of the king, you're like, there's no coming back from that. Like, yeah, that's like, okay, you melt it. Like, okay, you win. I'm a horrible person for saying it.
Yeah. And so my roommates ended up one night when I was not there, yelled my phone number through the vents. But I remember going down to his room once, and I felt like his room smelled like cat pee. And then I got in trouble because I hurt his feelings, and it was just a mess. But I lived like the floor above him in his exact room for 3 years.
Oh my wow. Gosh. And so, but you're probably so like, when it was time to like give him a call at, you know, hey, Ike Berger, do you want to go meet at the cafeteria or whatever? You wouldn't call. You would just shout it into the heating system.
That's exactly like if he was not answering my text message once we started dating, I was like, Gabriel, hello, right there.
Hey, every guy's dream right there.
I was about to say that's every guy's nightmare.
She's not answering my, text, but I can hear her screaming my name through the vent. So, okay. So, but sadly that's unrelated to the Monster Energy drinks. How did that come into play?
Yeah. So I had these two youth group boys that their parents really trusted me. And so they wanted to run a 5K. And at the 5K, Monster was sponsoring the event. So in the beginning, you could take a few Monster drinks. And then at the end, you could take a few Monster drinks. And then they had Monsters in the middle. And so my youth group boys, they're like, I'm bringing a backpack. And they're like, I'm taking all the Monsters. And so we thought that it was just at the beginning. So they loaded up their shirts and they loaded up their tea and they loaded up their backpack. And we ran a 5K with like, I swear, probably like 30 pounds worth of Monster drinks. And at the end, I feel like their parents were so upset because they walked in each of them with 100 Monster drinks. And I just feel like I was the world's worst youth leader at that point.
My roommate in college oversaw the student cheering section of our basketball team. And we briefly got sponsored by Red Bull. And he was in charge of holding the Red Bulls until before basketball games. But we had an insane amount of Red Bull. And I remember for like a semester drinking probably 6 or 7 a day. I know the toll that those energy drinks can take on the body. Hopefully you did the right thing. I feel like my organs aged significantly. Like I was outwardly like a 20-year-old college student. My kidneys were like in their 60s.
I'm, I'm just trying to wrap my head around the fact that like there's this 5K that, I mean, when was Monster considered a health drink?
That's what I was thinking. Like, that doesn't sound like what you're supposed to drink before you run.
No, it's not. Or after, or ever.
I get like, kind of nauseous drinking a Monster and sitting still. I can't imagine drinking one.
Hey, is North Central University an Assemblies of God school?
It is. Yep.
I thought so.
Do they have college age missionettes and Royal Rangers programs?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Did you go to an AG church growing up?
Yeah, I did.
Were you ever in missionettes?
I was not.
Oh.
How do you get out of it?
How did you avoid that?
Did you think they were nerdy? Did you think the Buckaroos were nerdy dudes? Be honest.
I didn't go until I was 15, so I was kind of out of it.
Even then, you heard
about it and were like, I would never hang out with a Buckaroo.
Jesse, Buckaroos are like kind of young, so you would be like a huge jerk if you were making fun of Buckaroos.
Yeah, Jesse, it's like first and second grade boys. Like, you're just cruel if you're telling them they're nerds because they want to learn how to tie knots.
They're the ones calling themselves Buckaroos.
Yeah, to be fair, it's a hard life lesson.
Better they learn it now.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, and then why did you put your principal's car on Craigslist?
So that was our senior prank that we did. We are from a really small town. Like, I'm from a town of 10,000 people, so there's not many things to do. And so what we did is we took a picture of our vice principal's car because no one liked her. And so we put it on Craigslist, and then we put the number to call the school secretary line. So they were getting calls because it was like, we put it for super cheap and it was a nice car. And so they were getting calls like all day long, like for a couple of days until they figured out that we did that and we got in trouble.
Did you actually get in trouble?
Well, I didn't take the blame.
She talked some former Buckaroo sucker into doing it because that kid never got picked on at the right age. And then he had to take a fall as a high schooler.
Hey, going to a town, I've always wondered this, small town America, teenagers, like there's a lot of drugs and stuff because there's nothing to do, right?
For
so
sure.
Like, okay, mm-hmm. if you're a good kid and you're going to youth group and stuff, you're not doing the drugs and you're not doing the,
right.
What do you do to entertain yourself?
Well, that's what explains the scythe and the bunny mask in my trunk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Okay, all right. Good segue.
Carry on.
We're listening.
So what we used to do is we would start wars with our guy friends. And so, like, they would all stay the night at their guy's house. And then we'd all stay the night at, like, one of our houses. And what we would do is we would try and scare them. Or we would go through like high speed chases in the 25 mile per hour zone of cars because they were convinced every time that it was someone else.
I got to be honest with you here. There's a lot of recreational drugs that sound way safer than what you got.
We had some scary moments for sure.
So you would wear the mask and then, like, you know, climb up in the window and scare the dudes or whatever?
Yeah. So one time we like painted our faces and we wore a bunny mask. I even, like, when the police searched my car, they found leather gloves too. So it looked really bad. We went and we would flash our headlights and be like, the game is on. And then we would try and scare them because they were always watching like horror movies and things like that. But then they would do things worse to us because they would have enough friends that they would literally block the road so I could not go through. And then they would throw water balloons filled with pee at my car, and my friend threw up in my car because of it. So it was crazy.
Things escalate quickly at that age. It's an eventful life you've led up to this point. Is it like burger?
You have to make your own fun in small towns.
It's true.
They'll launch a burger franchise, you know?
Yeah. If you ever do make that burger dream come true, I will be there at the grand opening, hands down.
Kind of like the Wahlbergs started Wahlburgers. Yeah. Same reason. It's not like they liked burgers. It's just inevitable because of their name. They have to.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, and my husband claims that he's a burger connoisseur, so it's happening.
Oh. Yeah. There you go. See, my only option is curry. And I don't even, I'm not even entirely sure what curry is. And so Carrie's curry probably ain't going to happen.
Carrie's curry. All right. Well, thanks for joining us. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. My husband and I love you guys. And we listen to you every week and just talk about everything we're learning from you guys. So we appreciate you so much.
Learning. Oh, all right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Brady.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Small town America. Different world.
You do have to make your own fun.
You do.
I mean, Lakeland water balloons like full too. Of pee. That's awful. Oh,
yeah, I don't even want to think too much about that.
I'm sure you've done that.
I was going to say, that's child's play. I would not believe what I've seen in the tank of a super soaker. I can't even.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I do not want that. Oh,
man. All right. Well, birthday show, Jesse, not on my birthday show.
Oh, that's right. This is your official birthday show. Do you have any birthday wishes you want to share? Are there any gentlemen callers you want to?
That was my wish. I thought we'd have Bebo Norman on my birthday show. Remember?
Oh, Jesse, why didn't we?
I forgot. We meant to tell you. That's a hard no.
Yeah. He said, no, thanks. He's like, I don't have any time for riffraff. I don't have any other birthday wishes, Cameron. I have everything I could ever want. I have the best life. And I love being on the show with you guys. And I'm super grateful. So I feel nothing this birthday except beyond thankful for the life I get to have.
Well, we accept, and I feel like my presence in your life is a great gift, and I receive it, and
I receive it.
It's true. It's received. Man.
Well, received. Happy birthday, Annie, and we're glad you're back from China.
We're glad you're
I'm
with
tired
us.
Of seeing all the tweets of saying the show really needs Annie back. So
those were deeply hurtful, and all those people were
involved. I'm very honored by those.
All right. Well, many thanks to Rachel Held Evans for joining us. Her new book, Inspired, is out now. You can follow her on Twitter at Rachel Held Evans. And thanks to our listener of the week, Brandy, for joining us. That was a lot of fun. If you want to be a future listener of the week, hit us up on Twitter and send us three facts about yourself that might catch Mark or Jesse's eye. And you could be on a future Friday episode. Hey, if you haven't gotten the new issue of Relevant, it's out now. Leon Bridges is the cover story. There's some other great features, you know, A-list movie stars, A-list artists, you know, some amazing theologians, activists. I mean, you know, the typical mix.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Go check it out now at relevantmagazine.com. You can also subscribe to get the paper edition mailed to your home. While you're online, if you like the show, head over to iTunes and leave a review. If you don't like it, keep it to yourself. But if you like it, it helps other people find the episode or find the show, and we appreciate it. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap things up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Andre Henry.
I'm Chandler Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
And I'm Annie F. Downs.
Happy birthday. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, bud. I got a lot of love for you, baby. I just seem to understand you when you're so misunderstood. We are on the same wave. Thank you for listening to the Relevant Podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to leave us a review on iTunes. Check out other shows from the Relevant Podcast Network in the podcast section at relevantmagazine.com. And while you're there, browse exclusive podcast merchandise at our online store. Make sure to subscribe to Relevant Magazine. Info is available at relevantmagazine.com/subscribe. We need to get away. We don't need no stress. We don't need no stress. We don't need no stress. We need to get away. We don't need no stress. We don't need no stress. Suspend your disbelief and believe in the power of magic. Relevant Podcast Network.